The following episode contains language and descriptions of violence and self-harm. It may not be appropriate for all listeners, but it was my life. Discretion is advised.
Motivational and inspiring real talk with ex-prison shot caller, Chappie. Exploring conversations around addiction, mental health, and inspiring life lessons, while providing actionable steps and tools to encourage change when you want more in your life. Now, here's your host, Chappie.
What up, what up? Welcome back to another episode of Roll Call with Chappie. I always got special guests for you, but I'm excited for this one myself. This is a favorite part of my job. I have a dude that's good at golf, and I wish I was good at golf. And I'm just excited to hear this story. So thank you very much for coming in. How do you say your name?
Charlie Belgian.
Charlie Belgian. Tell people your Instagram and stuff, and then we are going to get into your full story.
Cool. My Instagram is, I think it's just C Belgian. I'm just kind of...
Spell that out, though.
C-B-E-L-J-A-N.
Okay.
And, you know, when you look at the bio, it'll say former professional golfer, former alcoholic, little bit conspiracy theorist. So I've got it all covered.
Right up my alley.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So I always like to get into everybody's like different upbringing and stuff. And clearly I do know a ton about golf. So I know how hard it is to go pro in golf.
Yeah.
I would say the two sports that are hardest to go pro in is golf and baseball.
Okay.
Number one and two.
Yeah.
So I'm very curious to know how your upbringing went.
Okay.
So how was childhood like? Where'd you grow up and everything? Can we start from back then?
Easy. Born and raised right here in Mesa. Wow. Still live in Mesa. I grew up at a country club called Alta Mesa where my parents were at until I was about 15. They left, but luckily I was able to stay and had a bunch of good junior players there. Went to high school at Red Mountain High School, okay. Then went to University of New Mexico in Albuquerque. Kind of wanted to go be a Florida Gator or somebody, but I wasn't a big fan of flying 5 hours when I could just hop in the car and drive for 5 hours. So ended up there. Was a All-American for a few years there.
Really? So how early were you good at golf?
Shoot, my parents started shipping me to Houston when I was maybe 6 or 7. I learned the game from my grandfather there, who was a good golfer at the time. And then I didn't really get too serious with golf till about 12 or 13. And then... you know, I just happened to be good at it, man. I just started winning tournaments. And then, you know, kept working hard at it and then was going to go to a community college. Growing up, my folks didn't have a bunch of money, so I wasn't able to run all over and do all the national tournaments.
Probably spent whatever money they had to get me in those tournaments.
Exactly right. And so I got into this Junior World Tournament and then the United States U.S. Junior Amateur, which is one of the biggest tournaments, the 8 majors that the USGA holds. And I went from going to a community college, Mesa Community College, to I win the U.S. Junior, and I have my pick of any Division I school that I wanted to go to.
No
I mean,
way.
From Alabama to Florida, anywhere I wanted to go. Settled on
how was it like winning the tournament? Were you like expecting to go in there and win, or did you just play out of your ass, or like?
No, I played out of my ass, and I was extremely nervous, man. There's
because here's the thing: I played sports my whole life, dude. There's nothing that compares to the pressure in golf, like hitting a golf shot.
No,
putt,
and
like,
I think that's why so many other athletes and so many people are attracted to it because that little 3-footer with a couple dollars on the line and your buddy's breathing down.
I'll take a 6-footer over a 3-footer every day
all day long.
Because at least I'm not supposed to make every one of those.
No question. Yeah. That's why they're easier because you don't put that pressure on yourself to make them,
dude. I'm like, bottom of the ninth, like whatever it is, like there's nothing that compares to like even a 3-foot putter, an iron shot, like literally any golf shot for me. It's so crazy, man.
And you know what separates the best from the average is under those pressure packed situations is when the guys step up to perform, you know, and that's what
separates
them.
And I'm the exact opposite. Like literally in baseball, I'm like clutch as hell. Like golf, it is the exact opposite.
Okay.
Like if their pressure's on, I'm on 18, I'm spraying that thing out of bounds.
It's going out of bounds. Yeah, all right, sure. We're sending it. So we're definitely pressing you on the last hole.
Yeah, my slice right. So that's going to be your job to hopefully fix this someday.
Cool. Easy.
All right, so winning that tournament, how old were you when you won that tournament?
I was 17. Came back here to Mesa. I kind of became a legend overnight.
What's the feeling when you're 17 years old and you win that tournament? Now like your whole life's changed with college rights and everything.
It literally changed as soon as the last putt went in. I came home, I had my mom threw a party, I had about 200 people at the house. They sent me home with this trophy and this like a treasure box with a big padlock on it. We opened it up and then we just started partying. I was partying a little bit before, but that's kind of where I really started to open the doors and meeting people that, you know, giving me opportunities.
I could golf and party like this a lot, huh?
Easy. Yeah. And I did it, man.
Wow. Yeah. Real quick, I want to shout out to your mom and your wife that are in here too.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm a mama's boy too. So if you want to shout out the mom and wife for being here, I love seeing that too.
Yeah.
So it made my day when you're like, here's my wife and here's my mom. I was like, this is my kind of guy.
I wouldn't probably be here today if I didn't have either one of them. So I'm very thankful every day that they're here.
Cool. So, all right, we'll get into the details about all that afterwards too. But I'm the same way. Like, I hang out with my mom 5 or 6 days a week, like to this day, you know?
No question.
All right. So after doing that and you start partying a little bit, what happens then?
Start partying a little bit. And then I continue to play great golf, man. I go over as a freshman. I take a couple of the seniors positions at the University of New Mexico. I win freshman of the year, NCAA.
Wow.
I'm kind of just rolling. Sophomore year, I hit a slump or whatever. And then junior, senior year, first team All-Americans, and, decided I was going to turn pro when I left school. Came out to what was the Gateway Tour at the time here, where they had 150 guys every single week. Winner was making 30 grand. So all of a sudden, I leave college. I get a degree in I don't even know what, you know. just happened to show up to a few classes, and they gave me a piece of paper.
Yeah.
But I come out here. We're playing 3 days a week with your buddies, riding in carts, and all of a sudden now I'm making like 150, 200 grand in 16 weeks, 17 weeks, because I'm dominating out there. Now I got some cash in my pocket. I've got barbecues every day after we play, and that it just kind of snowballed, man. It snowballed quickly. So for 5 years, I played the Gateway Tour. I failed at Q school every time.
What's the Gateway Tour? Because I want to know too, because there's so many little tours. That's why, like, you're actually a PGA player. Like, how, like, I know people that are on the Corn Ferry Tour, all that stuff.
Right. The Gateway Tour, now it's called the Outlaw Tour here. It's just, it's basically organized gambling for guys that want to make it. You pay $1,000 entry fee. At the time, it was $30,000 to the winner. Now it's kind of died down. You might make 10 or 12, but for 3 days of work playing golf, still a great gig. But you quickly learn who has money because they have a backing and who has money because they can play. So a lot of my buddies quickly fizzled out. You know, they lost all their money. Their investors were like, shit, this isn't much of a return. So I kind of veered on a different track. 5 years of failing, almost gave up golf, didn't know what I was going to do. And then, as a matter of fact, I catch Valley Fever big time, and I have to take a year off for drinking. And in that year, I get through Q school, I get my tour card, and funny how that works, man. So then I roll into the tour.
It's literally comical when you realize this, like, how bad it is, like when we're drinking and stuff, and then like you stop it and just like the world, good stuff happens.
The world just opens up, man, no doubt. So then I get on tour. I get the okay that I'm not going to die. So I start hammering drinks again.
Celebrate.
Immediately. And then I'm on the road. I'm playing the tour. I don't know anybody.
How old are you at this time?
27.
Okay.
27. So I'm traveling the tour. I've got the world. I've got every opportunity. Anything you could think of was at my fingertips, and I took advantage, man. It was a great time, but the drinking just kept escalating. Then I go into my last tournament. I just had my son like 2 months prior, and I've got to finish solo third on the PGA Tour to keep my job. Well, I go out. I have a panic attack on national television.
Uh-uh.
Didn't even know what anxiety was.
What do you mean? Tell me what happened.
So it's the second round of the last tournament of the year. I got to finish solo third, so I got to make like 600 grand. I go out there, and I'm walking to the tee. I'm smoking a cigarette, and I look at my caddy, and I said, dude, I said, I'm not feeling well. And so the paramedics come out, they check me, they say, you know, it might not be a good idea to play or whatever. I'm like, well, I don't have a choice. And my job's on the line, everything's on the line. So I go out and I shoot 63.
Stop.
As I finish, so about number 12 on the back nine, the cameras roll in, I make the turn, I tell them that I feel like I'm gonna die. They come out, they tell me, hey, your blood pressure's crazy, everything's bad, I'm like, I can't quit. So the cameras are literally catching me laying down in the fairways and on the greens because I'm thinking I'm dying, but I've got to hit these shots. I've got an hour to get in. I got a half an hour. It's all over television. I get in, I walk past my buddies in the scoring, and I'm just sobbing, crying. And they're like, dude, you just shot 63. You're leading the tournament. What's the problem? They literally cart me from the scoring tent to the hospital. I stay in my clothes, in my golf shoes through the night. They're running tests. You can't go play. You can't go play. Well, I'm worked my whole life to get to this spot, man. So they let me out of the hospital at like 10 o'clock. I go back, catch 2 hours of sleep in my hotel room. I pull up to the parking lot, and I've got media all in my face for my 1 o'clock tee time. And lo and behold, the next 2 days I didn't have any panic attacks or anything, but I held the trophy at the end of the tournament, man. So I went from dying to a PGA Tour winner in a matter of 48 hours, and and my life really changed then. You know, if I thought I had opportunities before, now I had everybody knocking down the door that wanted a piece of me, and I just kept taking it to the next level, and so. I have a little break.
Tell me what happens right after that. Like what? Like the next couple of weeks? What goes on?
The next couple of weeks, partying? I come home and I throw 20 nights of parties in a row, having a good time, taking off out of town to my buddy's beach houses in California, you know, blowing it up. And then the new season starts. I come out. I miss a few cuts, and I'm like, well, this kind of sucks. And then Riviera. Over in California, I find myself in a playoff to win again. So I went from a rookie almost losing my card to now I'm about to become a two-time winner in a matter of like 2 months. I lost in the playoff, but it's still John Merrick. Doesn't play anymore, but yeah, he beat me in the playoff. I'm still bitter about it for sure. But that's how it goes. And then after that.
Club to win at too.
Exactly right, man. And then after that, funny story real quick. Is
I got all day for these stories, bro.
So after I lose, I go into this media tent, man, and they're asking me questions. And meanwhile, as I'm walking down the fairway to the media tent, I'm hammering drinks because I lost. But hell, I finished second. I collected a lot of money. Life's good. And I get into the tent, and they're asking me about Riviera. And I tell everybody that Riviera's got the 17th greatest hole, but the 10th hole should have a clown's mouth and a windmill. So the next year I call out there. I'm going to take a couple groups of buddies. That's one of the beautiful perks on tours. You can pretty much call any club, and they're going to let you come out, you know, if they're decent people.
For sure.
And they said, well, we haven't installed the clown's mouth and the windmill yet, so no, you're not welcome.
No.
And that's like that was kind of my first wake-up call. Is like, wow, I kind of might have to be careful what I'm saying here, you know, because, you know, before nobody really listened, and now all of a sudden everybody's listening. So that was kind of my first wake-up call. But just continue.
And that was it? They were serious?
I never went out. No. No, I went back the next year. Didn't even go say hello to the pro or anybody like that. I'm like, you guys are going to screw me. We'll take a hike, you know?
Oh, my God. But I'm
like, you can't take this away from me. This is a tour invite, so nothing you can do now.
For sure.
But I played well for five years there, man. I had three top tens and a runner-up. So it was kind of like horses for courses. I dominated that joint. I loved it. And then, you know, I would have like four or five good tournaments a year. The other 15, 20 sucked. And when they sucked and I got let go on a Friday to go to the next weekend, well, that's when I would really turn it up a few notches. And it just kept spiraling.
Blow that weekend off.
And yeah, no doubt. And then the traveling. And then...
if you don't mind me, how long have you and the wife been together?
We have been together 8, married for 5 in a month.
Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So it's been good. The first 6 years, as she'll tell you, really sucked. I can't even believe she's still here.
That's all the reason I'm asking. Yeah. I'm trying to do the math on that. How old are you?
I'm 30, just turned 38.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So the first 6 years really sucked. And the last 2 years, man, I can do no wrong. And it's we both deserve it. Her more so than me, but it's been killer.
Probably, huh?
No coincidences, man. Funny how that happens. Just like all of a sudden you call me Monday. You're like, hey, I got somebody that cancels. Come see me on Wednesday. And I'm like, dude, that's my 2 years, you know, sobriety. What are the chances, you know?
It's a funny story. So shout out to, I don't know, do you know who Josh Snow is?
Don't.
Probably know the name. He's the owner of the Snow White teeth whitening stuff.
Okay.
He's one of the biggest dudes. He's like it was worth 9 figures at like 26 years old. Like
okay.
Just a full-on genius. And he was supposed to do my show, and then we didn't send him a calendar invite. So he's like, dude, my calendar got screwed up and I forgot. He's like, can we do it any other day? And I was clearly God thing, because then I saw your Instagram story that day, and I was like, oh my God, that's perfect. I'll get him up. So it just worked out perfectly.
Yeah, you know, it's been funny with the Instagram thing. I've always wanted to give back. I've hosted some junior tournaments. I've done something, but that's just kind of giving money, dude.
Let's do some stuff together.
And to me, that wasn't really much. And then, you know, I've gotten sober, and I started thinking, hey, if I just share my story, a lot of people will probably connect, because the way it helped me is I was going to YouTube, searching for videos, going on walks.
Really?
And listen to that. I never went to AA. My mom just had in January or coming up, she'll either be 23 or 24. So growing up, I watched her go through it and I was like, I don't ever want to be that. That's shitty. Who wants to do that? And then I found myself right in the same spot, but probably deeper. And she was good at what she did. And I think I was better.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Wow. All right. Yeah. So I want to get into like after that, how did it start going to where you were like thinking you had a problem, and then how long did it go on where you like knew you had a problem, but you weren't stopping?
Well, we were just,
cause I get, I, and seriously, I get, blown away by people that can like you, it's a problem and then you just stop drinking. Like me, I don't stop until like I have zero other options.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So we were just talking at lunch and my mom went back and found emails from my freshman year in college of me saying, all right, mom, this week I'm not going to drink Monday through Friday. I'm just going to do it on Saturday and Sunday. So it's been an issue for a long time. My mom had probably been begging me for a decade, 15 years maybe, to quit or to slow down. And, you know, so I would try to, you know, have a drink here, have a drink there, but I'm not a one-hit wonder. I want to go all the way.
You know, so bad with me too. I don't like the taste of alcohol. So like I would get drunk so much faster because I'm like just
hammering them.
These drinks. Yeah. I'm like, I don't like the taste of any of this shit.
You know what I'm saying? See, I really enjoyed the Bacardi, man. I sure did.
I don't think I've ever drank in Bacardi. Like I was such like an alcoholic drinker. I would just like chug hard drinks and just get hammered an hour and then who knows what's happened the next 3 hours.
Yeah. But so I started doing that and then I've known I had a problem for a long time, man. And when I say a problem, like,
was there any certain instances where you like this happened? You're like, all right, like the next day, you're like, this is a problem. Any that stick out?
Probably like every other week. I had those instances. Yeah. But you know what? I didn't give a shit. Yeah. I was going to do what I wanted to do. I was untouchable. Nobody could bother me.
I got that tattoo down my shin.
Okay.
Untouchable.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. And that's how you feel. You feel like you can do no wrong. So then I met my wife now, and she knew what she was getting
into.
Where'd
you guys meet?
Through some mutual friends, Sunday football party. We both hung out a little bit longer and that was that. But she knew what she was getting into when we started. She was only a one night, maybe two night a week drinking. Well, before I know it, she was on my loop, seven nights a week, six nights a week. And it just, there was a lot of conflicts, a lot of shit that was going wrong.
For sure.
And it got really bad. And then she came to me and said, hey, you know, I knew what I was getting into, but this is to another level. And I'm not sitting here telling you that you got to stop, but it might not be me that you're going to continue this path with. And that was kind of my aha moment. As a matter of fact, it was this week. I was up at the Sedona Open 2 years ago and I hit 50 of 52 greens in the tournament. Should have won the tournament by 10, but I had 17 three putts because my hands were shaking so bad because I was so hammered the night before by myself in my hotel room in Sedona, dude. Like I turned it on everywhere.
Dude, you're not like a PGA Tour golfer. Like I feel like you could have dominated if you were sober.
You know what?
Like honestly, why don't you golf now?
It was funny when I got sober, man, I said, you know what? I owe it to myself to go out there and try it again.
I was just going to say, let's do this. I want to make that a mission for you.
I went out on the range for 20 minutes and started to practice and realized I don't enjoy it, man. I play 4 days a week. I got a great group of guys. I love the banter. I love the gambling. I love being out. But
Golf gamble with you and you're a plus five?
Yeah, I give a lot of strokes. Yeah. I give a lot of strokes. But
you're about two a hole.
You know, I got a 10-year-old boy now and being gone 30 weeks a year wasn't my jam. Just realized that I'd never really enjoyed the golf. I just happened to be good at it, man. And every time I wanted to quit, somebody gave me that next breakthrough or I won that tournament that just kept me going. And I always said, as soon as I quit, I said, I'm going to give it one more fair shot and see what I can do. And I have zero desire. I haven't been on a range since that day that I went to the range.
How many people would give anything to have your whatever it is, like with golf?
Everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody. But you know what? I'm not everybody.
Even
you know,
the clutch
not everybody
shit, like,
can
I still
just,
can't believe
yeah.
That,
you know? So, but I mean, I was going to the point like where, you know, at Riviera, I'm sitting on a lead on Saturday on a PGA Tour event. And meanwhile, I'm cranking back 25 beers because I know I don't got to go till 1 o'clock. I mean, it was just nonstop. And
was any part of you, or did you guys know about how bad John Daly was? Was there a part of you like, I want to go hammer just chill with John Daly?
Because
if I was you, I'm thinking like this, if I'm like that and I'm at the Riviera or something like that, I'm going to be like, I'm going to try and find Daly after golf thing and see what trouble we can get into.
Well, let me tell you this. John Daly had an RV and I had an RV and we traveled the circuit together.
Oh.
So John and I have had some nights together and some stories together. Great dude. And I think the reason everybody loves him because he's so relatable. He's got, loves to smoke cigarettes, doesn't really give a shit.
He doesn't
care, man. And people can
relate
to that.
My mother's in here.
People can relate to that because, you know, everybody else out there, if you're looking at Rory or Justin Thomas, you know, it's print proper, the whole deal.
Like,
yeah. And so it's Yeah, we had some time
together. Any stories you can say without him getting mad at you on air?
Oh, he wouldn't give a shit what I said, for sure. But, you know, and then...
He's just a favorite of, like, all my buddies, yeah. too. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just love people
and
like
then,
that.
And then hung out a bunch with Ernie Els, the older guys. So when I got out there, I went right to the older guys. I've always hung out with older people and said, same, hey, dude, yeah. why? If I want to be the best, I'd want to hang around with somebody figure that's done it, doing, you yeah. know, instead of wasting all my time with all these other rookies. Let's just get right to it. So I made a lot of relationships with them, and now you're talking Ernie Els, who's a Hall of Famer in that, and we're talking planes and parties, and oh. it was a time to remember for sure.
Wow.
Yeah, no doubt. I remember not with Ernie, but flying places and people getting off the plane and pitching bottles down the runway and then telling us to get back on the plane because we're not welcome here. I mean, just out of control shit for sure.
Damn. I still can't believe 50 or 52 greens.
Yeah, yeah. So my whole PGA Tour career.
I couldn't do that in miniature golf, bro.
Right, and where you start on the yeah. green, yeah. But so my whole golf career, man, I from tee to green's very easy for me, but I was never a good putter, and that was the difference. If I putted well, I played well that week. If not, then it was going home or on
and
to
you're
the next
a big
week.
Boy. You don't even look that big on the IG. Like, you could probably hit the ball a mile.
I used to hit it a lot longer, and I've learned it's a lot easier to play from the fairways, so I've toned it down a little bit. But, yeah, so my second year, Bubba
learn,
Watson.
How did you learn how to do that? I cannot learn that for the life
yeah,
of me.
Yeah, there's a guy out here that taught everybody to hit a hard hook when I was growing up, and so that's how you know you created that lag and got that pop and sent it, but you just really didn't know what direction it was going.
Damn.
Yeah.
All right, so... After she gives you not the ultimatum, but the kind of like the little wake up call,
yeah.
what happens the next days or week?
So I told her, like I told her a million times, I said, all right, you know, I'm going to cut down. And we were actually.
I'll stop drinking hard alcohol. I'll just go to beers and all that.
Tried
stuff.
Doing that, yeah. man, no doubt. But then, or, we you all know, tried I'd only that. Have, I'd only have one drink, but then I'd have a, you know, a 10 shot diet, you yeah. know, because that's
splash
one drink,
on
you know,
it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you find all these ridiculous ways
yeah,
to do it
anything,
for sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's the craziest shit is you can justify anything.
And you're in such a fog. Like,
nope.
dude, thinking, like, when I think back and like, sometimes I'll catch up, I'm in the middle of telling a story, I'm like, it's embarrassing. Like,
yeah, 100%.
You know, like, or I'm like, it's like sometimes if I'm like meeting a new woman or something like that, and I'm like trying to tell, and she wants to know everything, I'm like, oh my god. And
yep.
like, I'll get through half, and I'm like, this is.
As a matter of fact,
going.
A matter of fact, last night my wife and I were taking some of her family to the airport for a midnight flight, and as we're driving back, she looks at me and she goes, you know, 2 years ago, you. Because I would pass out at 7, I'd wake up at 3 a.m., and I would rock my day until about 2 or 3, and then I'd start it again. But I was passing out at 7 o'clock, getting my 8 hours of sleep. I had it down. But she goes, you know, 2 years ago, you would have never been on this car ride with me. And then I started thinking, I'm like, 2 years ago, I either had a driver or I never drove after 5 o'clock. Because yeah. 5 o'clock, getting to 5 o'clock, 4:30, boy, I started shaking because at 5 o'clock, I could justify it, you know? I could justify, all right, it's 5 o'clock, we can have a drink. But I never drove a car, or if we went to dinner or out with friends, it was Ubers or car services or whatever it was. And I was like,
hammered like 5
man,
or 6
I was like,
before dinner.
Yeah,
huh?
No question, yeah. because either I didn't like who I was going to dinner with dinner or I just want to see if I could get even more hammered. And that was my problem is I always wanted to take it to the next step. Like, we're feeling good now and we felt good last night. Well, let's see if we can set a new record, man. And it was to the
point. If 10 shots worked out well last night, why don't I double it tonight?
100%. No question. Then it got to the point where it was like halfway through the night, I'd kind of know if I was grabbing my pillow off the bed to sleep in the shower or if I was going to be able to sleep in the bed that night. And yeah, dude, I mean, it was deep for sure. You know, and do I regret it and am I embarrassed by it and all that stuff? Yeah, but it's made me the person I am today. So
for
would
sure.
I want to change it? No, because I also had some badass times and some
yeah.
cool experiences. But in
that
two
makes one of us.
But in these two years, man, it's the experiences and the things that I get to remember. You know, like last week, my buddy calls me Wednesday morning. He said, I bought tickets for Wednesday night. So I flew to Houston real quick to go to the Houston Yankees. We went to games 1 and 2. And it was funny because the first night they were cranking, man, having, you know, a ball. And then the second night, everybody toned it back down. But it's just, you just watch what that booze does to people, especially when you're sober. And you're like, what hurts me the most is I'm like, because nobody takes it to the level that I did, but I'm embarrassed when I watch these people, not because of how they're acting, but because that was me times 10. And then you didn't give a shit who's around. Mm-hmm. You didn't care who you hurt. You know how many times I woke up in the morning and she'd be like, you got to text so-and-so, the owner. You got to text them this because last night you told them how to run their business and they were doing a shitty job. Oh. And I'm like, oh, man.
I was looking at my phone sometimes. I'm like, what? The hell?
No question. Like,
what happened last night?
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? I was like, damn, it must have been a good night then. Yeah, yeah, really, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay, so the first couple weeks after that, was that talk enough?
I had been wanting to do it, and for some reason, I guess it was kind of like cigarettes. I smoked forever, and then one morning at a golf tournament, I woke up, I told my caddy I was never going to have another cigarette again, and he just laughed his ass off, and it's been 6 years. And so I'm either the all-in or nothing, and I'd been wanting to do it and been wanting to do it. And for some reason, something happened when I went to bed that night and something changed when I woke up and here I am.
All right. So I really like this because, you know, I got sober in the AA room. Some people do. Others, yep. Whatever works for everybody. Yep. It is what it is. I don't care at all. Yep. But you didn't use the room. So what was your steps to like help people that are trying to get sober? Because a lot of people don't like AA and I don't. Yeah. I'm an AA fan, but I don't. The only thing I don't like about them is like I just feel like it's so like black and white with them. Like you have to do this to get sober. If not, it's not going to work. And then other stuff works for other people.
Yeah. You know, my mom did the AA jam, still goes back and gets her chip every year. And it worked for her. That wasn't going to work for me. That's just not. And so literally I just started Googling and YouTubing and I was drinking 25 non-alcoholic beers a day.
That's my daddy started O'Doul's. You remember those days, Mom?
Crushing O'Doul's, crushing whatever, because it was at least giving me a little bit of a fix or a little bit of something. But when I was sitting there and I'd be stacking, my wife hated it because literally on the weekends, I mean, I'd wake up 6:30, that Bud Light would go for the 7 o'clock, you know, game day. And then come the end of the day, I'd have a pyramid of beer cans. 30 high, man. And that was my goal, is just every weekend, see if I could get that can higher, man. And if somebody touched that, because we all, our house was.
And these are O'Doul's cans?
No, this was Bud Light's then. And then I threw away the.
What a good way to try and do it on the weekend as an adult, just try and make tall beer towers.
Absolutely. And I learned that from a good buddy of mine who then he quit out of the blue. And I was
good
like.
Good thing you never met my brother when you were drinking.
I was like, man, if my buddy can quit, I might be able to do this. And, you know, here I am two years later, and it's still a battle for sure.
I was going to ask you, at the Houston Yankees game.
Yeah.
Do you have thoughts of it or anything at all? Or do you like, I'm so anti now, like, I just can't believe I did it that long. And I don't even like.
Yes, I still want to, but I'm deathly afraid because I know one sip sends me right back to where I was.
So that's like, my house is gone. I probably have handcuffs on again. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But
did you ever get handcuffs on?
I did. Yeah, I got. Yeah, sure did. DUI. Okay. I mean, nothing crazy. Yeah, who hasn't? Exactly. But I'm lucky. That's all it was, you know, for sure. Because I couldn't. There's still to this day, there's nothing better than riding with a cocktail in the car. Windows down, music up, buzzing. I mean, life is good when you're behind the wheel doing it for sure. But you can't do it.
Did you ever see the movie The Shot Caller?
I did. Hell yeah. Dude, I've watched it a bunch.
That is so true.
Yeah, I can't find something on Netflix, that's always what I go back to.
If you ever want to know, so that's how prison is too. Like in Supermax, like those are like literally how shots get called on yards. They'll pull the two dudes out in suit and SMU2 and they meet in rec cages in their freaking boxers or something. And they make a rule and it goes statewide that. Like literally that's how it
really?
Is. Whoever produced that movie had a family member or something like that was full in on there. In the security threat group, like a validated member, like, cause that movie is to a T.
Okay. Yeah, wow. All right. Well, crazy. I'm going to have to watch it again to really put it together. All right, cool.
Wow, dude, that is just insane. So, Was it hard the first few weeks just watching YouTube videos? Because, and any advice you can give on people too? Because idle time is a killer.
That's the hardest part.
So you have to pick up a routine. Like gym's huge for me. You have to trade all that time with something else because you can't just sit around and do nothing.
No question. So for me, I'm doing like 2.5-3 hours at the gym a day. That's become a drug for me for sure. But
better vascularity than me, dude. Jesus, bro.
But, you know, it was watching YouTube videos. It was taking motorcycle rides. It was doing, I mean, from trimming bushes in the backyard or laying sprinkler line and watching YouTube just to keep me busy. Because, and I think the hardest thing when people first quit is, like you said, you have so much idle time and you actually got to sit there with your thoughts and your feelings and you're like, holy shit.
And you could win those thoughts for 30 straight days and then just all it takes is one bad day.
One bad day, no doubt. And I think that's the hardest thing.
And then another hard thing is it's your friend. So like on that weekend, you have a routine of like, I always chill with these guys. Now it's like, do I have to cut these guys off or something?
Yeah.
So what I notice a lot of people do is they'll cut those guys off for a few weeks and then they get tired of being bored at home on the weekend for a few weeks, and they're like, I'm just going to hang out with them and just tell them I don't drink now.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And how many of your friends are well up like that? You're not going to drink with us?
You're not going to drink, exactly.
Usually what friends do.
It's a joke what people are like, well, you don't drink? Yeah, what's it matter to you? Why do you drink? It's
literally.
Have
you seen that meme that was going on? I don't know if it's a meme, whatever you want to call it, but they're saying like alcohol is the only disease that you can like get, you get like reamed for saying that you don't do or something anymore or something like that.
Similar, but yeah. Yeah, it is. So, yeah, I mean, I when I quit, I was drinking those non-alcoholic beers. I would smoke a joint each night. I'd watch the sun go down, drink that, and that did it for me. That gave me enough relief or enough of the, took the edge off to continue. But then I just started learning new shit and finding new stuff to do. And I was
anything
like,
that stick out on YouTube, people you know that you remembered watching their stuff?
I don't remember. I mean, I was literally just typing in, you know, quit drinking sober, or AA or how to be sober. And I found this guy in Australia and he put out like a 10-minute video and I couldn't wait. I fiend for his next, for his
really?
Information, man.
That's why you're like, I'm going to do that.
Exactly. And that's kind of where I learned. And when I was literally waiting for this information to hit me, and now all I want is information. That's my new jam, is I just want to learn more. And what's incredible is how many new things I've learned to do and how much smarter I am at the things that I thought I was smart at when really I was an uneducated fool. But I've found a ton of shit to do that before I never did because I was just so focused on my next drink, man.
It's like you have a whole nother life, right?
No question. It was like Saturday, Sunday, you knew what you were going to do. You're going to get hammered. Your buddies were going to come over. And then that turned into Monday. We had an open front door, dude. People would randomly come to the house. I got a great view of the city, and they'd come sit on the back and we'd be like, oh, I'm going to have a beer or two, watch the sunset. And before you know it, it's midnight and we're just cranking full bore. And
dude, it's so funny that one of your videos I saw on your Instagram that I shared to my mom to send to my brother too, is the one where you were talking about like, cause I was the same way. My brother's going through the same stuff. You know, it's like there's Thursday night football,
yeah.
Friday night, Saturday night, right. Sunday,
yeah.
Monday.
And late in the season, you get college football on Tuesday, and really Wednesday, your only break.
Well, then there'll be double headers in basketball. And if the Suns are playing on a Wednesday night, that's literally what it is, you know?
No
and
doubt.
It's like, God, it's so true. Cause that was the problem with me. Like, I want to stop. And I was like, I'm going to stop and I'm only going to do stuff on like when there's events or
right.
something like that. And I can make an event every day.
Absolutely.
I'll make one.
And
right
I don't
this.
Even need anybody
I'll
to make an event.
Event.
Yeah. I can do it by myself. That was the hardest.
I had a Masters at 3:00 today on a Wednesday.
Let's go.
You didn't know about that place?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that was
who else was there? No, I don't know. No one showed up, but I was there.
But I was there. And guess what? And we had a great time. All three of us, me, myself, and I, for sure. But, I don't know what I was just getting ready to say, but
tell me how just different the past 2 years have been, like relationship wise with the wife and everything. Like it's crazy, right?
Everything. You know, I've lost some friends for sure. But when I look at it, the only thing I had in common with those friends was the booze. And as soon as the booze was gone, I didn't offer them anything. They didn't offer me anything. And I got no problem cutting people, man. You're either worth my time or you're not. Life's short. So 100%. Why am I going to waste my time? Every relationship I have now has increased 1,000%. The relationship I have with my wife, I'm so lucky that it went and happened the way it did. Not that I put her through this, but the love that she has for me and the support that she has for me, and I get to see the amazing woman. I didn't realize what an amazing woman she was until I quit, and I could just see just what a powerful, beautiful, caring woman that she is. And now we do shit together that we would have never done before, because if she had an engagement but it got in the way of my drinking, well, guess who lost? Her engagement, for sure. I didn't care about it at one bit.
I already knew the answer
and now,
to that one.
Yeah, and now I can't wait to be a part of it. She's selling real estate. And,
really nice.
Yeah, so
she golf at all?
She doesn't. She keeps trying to learn, but she's kind of a perfectionist, so it doesn't happen instantly. So she's like, hell with this. So she's like, well, let's go out.
Does she ever ride in the car with you when the weather's nice or no?
Yeah, she does. We go on golf cart rides quite a bit, but she wants to get back out there. It's cart path only, as you know, most places, and I'm too lazy to do cart path only. So I'm waiting till not cart path only, then we'll start getting it. My boy, he lasts like 2 or 3 holes. Mainly, he doesn't have his buddy, but he does a lot of other stuff. So
you're 10-year-old?
Yeah.
Oh, that's what I was going to ask next. Yeah. Is he into golfing or?
No, he's into dirt bike riding and flag football.
Okay,
which is cool with me, man.
Because you're close to the desert out there, right?
Yeah, yeah. So we're right there. So
Marshall's a big dirt bike rider.
He is.
Yeah.
Okay. I won't ride a dirt bike because I know that I'll break a leg or an arm. I got a big Harley that I cruise down to the lake on a few nights a week, and that's another thing I do, man. Like especially if I'm stressed out, I hop on my bike, I cruise down the lake, I jam some tunes. I got the wind going, and that's a
mine's
nice little
jam,
release.
Like still, because you gotta have outlets for it. Like I'll still like, I'll be in the like if I'm in the middle of getting an argument, mad or something, like I don't even like, I just black out. I'm like, I'm just going to the gym. Like, it's just like a routine thing. And right. I'll be on the phone, like still going off. Like, I'm literally somewhere to the gym right now.
Yeah.
You know, like, I have to have outlets for stuff.
Yeah. No, you absolutely have to, because sitting there, especially when you're first trying to do it, you don't got a chance to survive by yourself, man. Because if you did, you would have done it a long time ago on the other 100 times you wanted to
quit. Do you have any points? Because I feel like there was always like points where like the first few days are definitely the toughest, you know, and then you get a couple weeks and then it's like, I just feel like there's always like just a hurdle that you get over. And it's like, whether it's a 3 week or 2 month or, you know, it could be 2 weeks, something like that. Then you're like, holy shit, I can actually do this. And I feel like it eases for you a little bit, you know?
Yeah. I feel like my hurdle took a lot longer because I was just so deep. I mean, it was probably like 18 months for me. And
really?
Literally driving home in the golf cart the other night from this little concert at the park in our neighborhood, I looked at my wife and I said, this is actually the first time that I've gone out and I've been comfortable with who I am now. I'm not sitting there wondering, you know, are these people wondering why I'm drinking? I'm not sitting there saying, gosh, you're being quiet. You need to say something to fit in. And I just sat there and it was like a euphoric moment, man. I was like, this is what it's about, you know, because I used to always say that I didn't give a shit what people thought and I could care less when I was drinking or whatever. But dude, I craved the attention and I was just lying to myself like we do about everything else. And now when I say that, man, I truly mean it. Like, I don't give a shit if somebody has an opinion of me or somebody does me wrong. Like, we're done and we move on and there's no grudges and we cruise, you know, and
it's
a powerful thing for sure to be able to have that aha moment with yourself, because when you're pounding them, you're doing that. That's not who you are. You know, like they call them spirits for a reason, in my opinion, because it literally sucks the soul right out of you getting hammered, no doubt. And it's just poison that you're pumping in there. But it's like thinking back to the PGA Tour real quick, they had these Wednesday.
I just want to go back to the PGA Tour stuff too.
Yeah. Like, so on Wednesday night, man, on Wednesday night, they'd have these functions. So if you didn't have to play in the pro-am as a tour player, you're obligated to go do these things for the sponsors that put in all the money. So on Wednesday nights, they'd have these sponsors functions. Well, nobody ever wanted to go to these because you teed off the next day. You didn't want to go chit chat and mingle. Me, I'm like, take me. I'm going to hang out with wealthy businessmen and I can get hammered. And this is like the ideal situation. Sure. They're always like, why do you want to go do this so bad? I'm like, why wouldn't
you? Close those down every
Wednesday.
Yeah,
absolutely. Right? And then be up at 5 a.m. to go play on the biggest stage that there is, man.
Would you drink before golf?
I did one time, but I don't even when I go with my buddies, I don't enjoy drinking on the golf course. That was just never a thing for me.
See, that was a hard thing for me. You know, it's crazy. When I quit drinking, that was one of the things I was like, I literally almost tried to justify. I was like, I played a couple rounds of golf. I was like, I'm just going to have to drink just when I golf.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I told you, I'm not clutch as it is. And then, like, after you take alcohol out of the equation, I was just
then
like, the only way I was
decent
is when I loosen up a little bit, when I get a buzz. And I'm just like, dude, because my sponsor is, he did like the mini tours or something like that, but he's like a really, really good golfer. And I remember talking to him about it. I was like, yo, I can't golf. Like, what am I going to do? He's like, let's not worry about that right now. I'm like, I like to golf, dude. And I'm like, I can't even like someone hit a golf ball anymore.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I thought I was bad before. I was like, it is
really bad now.
Yeah. And I literally just took a few months off and just went back and then you just figured out just like you do with any
old
thing. Exactly.
It's like today when we're done here, I'm going to go play golf with my buddies. They're going to have some beers, have a great time. But that was never a thing for me. So that was easy.
I honestly like being the person that doesn't drink now.
It's the greatest.
I seriously do. Because you'll notice like once people all get drunk and they want to have heart to hearts with you and like, how'd you do it? And then it's like, and they'll be like, how do you, like, we're not, if I go to like big events or something like that and I'll be in bottle service, I'm like, we don't drink or anything. Like, how do you not drink? And I'm like, yeah, it's easy.
How do you?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, the only thing I get annoyed with, and my wife will say this, is, you know, if the party's from 5 to 9 or whatever it is, there's a good chance I'm not staying till the end anymore because I can't handle the same bullshit stories being told to me 4 times. And the thing that really
I'll show up at 8 o'clock and leave at 9.
Exactly. Yeah, just make your appearance and roll. The thing that really cracks me up is you learn that, like, these people are like, oh, I've missed you so much. I can't wait to see you. We need to hang out more. And then you never hear from them again. It's like, and then you realize that was me, man. That was me staying all this dumb shit just for what reason,
just
you know?
As hell,
exactly,
just,
man. And now, like, now I sit there and I observe and I watch and I listen. I don't have to be the guy that's got the big mouth, you know, drawing all the attention. Instead, I'd rather just take it all in, really see what's going on and you know, who's worth my time, really.
Yeah. So. Damn, so this is crazy. I just think about you and John Daly on there. Like, I just have so many questions. I don't even know what the hell to ask.
He literally cook every night. I mean, cocktails.
Yeah,
because
everyone's friends are going to want to know about John Daly stuff too.
Yeah, and he would sit out. We'd sit outside and we'd barbecue because there's about 5 of us from guys like Jimmy Walker, Robert Garrigus, Jason Day.
Jason Day, who's also sober.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, he is. But so we had a nice little community that traveled together. But yeah, we'd sit out there and we would just drink them until you could.
Were you drinking back with Jason Day?
I never drank with Jason Day. No, but he was sober, around
he has
in there.
Little,
yeah,
he has a little bit of time. I can't now. I think even. He has like 8 or 11 years. Or
okay,
something
I was
like
gonna
that.
Say. Well, that would take me then him just before we would have met because I don't ever remember seeing him drink. Okay. But Daly and I.
Daly and the stories are. But he was seriously. I drink after 9. Drink before 18. Like
crushing those big cups that he has, man. I mean, they're.
Can't even imagine how much alcohol's in those things.
Not just
I
Diet
remember
Coke.
My Uncle Mark, dude. Yeah. So I'm at a. And this is my family, like my dad's side of family. No offense, mom. But they're huge dudes. Like yeah. I'm small for the family. Like my couple are 6'6", 6'7", you know, like my our aunts are what 6'1" and 5'11", and they just drink, bro.
Yeah.
And we're playing, but they're like, my uncle's like a comedian. He's like a cartoon character, you know. He's like full on watching pay per view TV.
Right.
But it's like you don't want him at your house doing what he's doing or something like that, and then you want to be able to make sure you have an exit plan or something, you know. Yeah. And so they're playing the drinking game with, where you play with beer, you know? And my uncle is just like, he's playing this drinking game with a mixed drink and a beer.
Yeah.
And he has me make his drinks, right? So I make this thing and I'm like chuckling about it. Like it's a whole cup right here. I swear to God, I pull the entire thing of rum or whatever hard alcohol was. I'm not joking. There's a half an inch on top and I pour a little splash of Coke and I tell like my brother and all of them, I'm like, wait till you see him take a sip of this drink, you know? I go over there, give it to him, and he starts chugging this thing. And he's like that's the nothing. Best damn drink I ever got. And I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, dude, it's full on hard alcohol. Like, right. I literally put this much soda in it. He's like, I like it, man. He goes, that drink's awesome. I'm just like, oh my. And then before you know it, he's dancing my dad in the garage, kicks a hole through my dad's garage door. And it's like, that's a typical Tuesday night for me.
I was lucky because I knew I could never hurt myself. So I never did anything stupid. But a funny story real quick about John that just came in. I'd try to keep him where, in case he does hear this. But we're in Cromwell, Connecticut. We're parked next to each other. We're ripping till 2 or 3 in the morning. It's like 5:30 in the morning. I'm hearing a banging on the side of my rig and I open the window and there is his fiance at the time with a 10-foot pole scrubbing my RV. He's got a beer in his hand, a cig, no shirt, underwear, and he's sitting there spraying my rig and he's washing my, and I walk out and I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, here. And there we go. We start drinking again, take a 2-hour break, and it's 7 in the morning or 5:30 in the morning. We're back at it again. So
no way,
just a fantastic, you know. And he had his son, Little John, always running around. And now Little John's a good player at the University of Arkansas. But I mean, it didn't matter, man. We did it.
I know, and he said he used to hit, like he would see 3 golf balls a lot of times.
Yeah.
And literally hit the one in the middle.
Yeah.
I can't even fathom
it. I never
played. Imagine how good he'd be if he didn't drink.
No question, man.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and that's what's sad, and you know, about everybody and all sorts of different stuff is what could have been your true potential, you know? But we go through it for a reason, and fuck it.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
What other plans do you have coming up now? So you don't, since you don't want to do the PGA Tour.
So... I got.
And did your goals change, or like what you want to do in life now that you're not drinking? Did everything change for you?
Yes. So everything did change. I did, however, I got lucky, and in 2016, I ran across Bitcoin when Bitcoin was a couple hundred dollars, and I started stacking up.
I hate those stories.
And so since then, I bet I spend 10 hours a day researching and reading and trade. I trade full time.
Okay. I got some guys I need to hook you up with,
that's
too.
That's my income. I invest in different stuff, and then I've turned into just some finance freak. I don't do anything in the stock market or anything like that. I like crypto. I like that it's unregulated. There's no rules. There's nothing you got to worry about. And that is
my
passion.
What are your thoughts on it right now, though, dude? Because I thought for sure it was going to go back up, and I've been a little freaked out a little bit.
My thoughts are right now I'd like to see Bitcoin come down to like 12 or 13K before a run, but it's just cycles, just like a stock market cycle of this. But once the framework is getting, we obviously know that we're in a dire situation with the money printing, and we did. I truly believe that digital assets are going to come and save the day. They're passing framework all over the world left and right. It's kind of ironic that all the world's currencies and economies are collapsing at the same time. I think we are getting ready to see a massive new financial shift in the transformation of the financial system, and it's all going to be digital for sure. And I won't say it out loud, but after I'll tell you what I think the key coin is coming up.
And
for
I got
sure.
some big guys I can connect with too.
Yeah, so that's really my successful. My jam. I'm part of a fund out in Houston that just day trades Bitcoin, buys and, or, you know, longs and shorts it. I've made some great friends out there. I head out. That's why I was just out with the Astros game. I go see them. We play golf, really develop some nice friendships. But it's also hard because in that world, there's not a lot of people. And most of the people, everybody thought I was crazy when I first started doing it. And now everybody's coming to me for the information.
I can't believe you got into it back then. Like, how the hell did you see that coming?
I had this buddy that was the number one player in golf in the world, went to UCLA, left UCLA, went to ASU, and then I was watching his Instagram. The son of a bitch is on top of the, at the biggest penthouses, on the biggest planes, and I'm texting him. I said, what are you doing, man? He goes, I started buying Bitcoin at like $10.
No
way. And I'm like, and at this time, it's only like $600 or $700. So I'm like, boy, he got into this deal, right? So that's kind of how I dove in, man. And I went head first, and I went all in. I'm an all or nothing. I took everything I had and threw it at it.
Stop.
And so it worked out. It worked out.
I can tell by the smirk on your face. Jesus Christ. Wow.
Yeah. So I am a full bore. That is my passion. Like, even so, I get into a handful of tournaments on the PGA Tour out of the past champions category each year. So I go play, and I'm literally the guy that's walking down the fairway in between every shot, and I'm trading on my phone and staying on top of the news because it moves so fast that I don't want to miss.
Really?
And I'll have rules officials come up and be like, dude, you got to put that way. What are you doing? I'm like, I'm actually making more money doing this than I am if I have a good week playing. So yeah. I'm just going to continue. And if you want to find me, then find me. But nothing ever came of it. But that's how into it I am, that I walk down the fairways with my cell phone out looking
at it. What kind of clubs did you play and what do you play now?
So
do
I
have
been,
a favorite or besides
yeah,
your
phone, I got a favorite, Strixon. I've been with Strixon since 2008. I think that all the club companies are relatively killer and the technology. And when you're out on tour, you got to spend so much time with these guys. They're building clubs, you're doing dinners.
So me, like,
I was picking the people who I wanted to have the dinners with and that. Because, yeah.
When you're playing those blades, you're all good. They're all pretty much the same.
I ain't right? good enough to play a blade, that's for sure. And anybody
you didn't play a blade?
No. Anybody that's playing a blade, go get yourself a new set because I promise you, you suck.
Really?
Yeah. Don't play a
blade.
Tell
me why you say that.
Because it's why would you play something that's so thin and so unforgiving when you got technology that you can hit it on the toe or the heel and it's
here's
still going to go straight?
Here's what I was wondering is what is the... I don't get that either, but my sponsor would play blades and he'd say like you could just control the ball more.
You might, yeah, if you want to work, that's horseshit.
I agree.
If you want to work the ball a little bit left or right, you can do it. Now the technology, you can do it easily. So it's about having a more forgiving club and a mishit with a blade, a 7-iron that goes 150 and you mishit it, now it goes 135. Well, with the new technology or the bigger club head, that 150 is only, it's going to go like 148. So now instead of the front bunker, you're still putting, you know? So
cool. We debunked Roger's theory.
Yeah.
I'm happy about
quickly,
this.
Yeah. And if he's got a problem with it, you
he
tell him to call
the
me.
Old Big Bertha driver still.
Okay, so what the hell's his problem? He plays an ancient, but now he's trying to play a blade? He's mixing the wrong things for sure. Yeah, I've always played a big head because I like the forgiveness, and golf
Scotty
is hard.
Scotty Cameron putter?
I did play Scotty Cameron's, but I've been using Odysseys forever. I collected a lot of the Scotty Cameron's. I think
that's
they're right, great.
So
they're great
Scotty
putters. But for me, the feel of an Odyssey is just...
Yeah,
it doesn't really matter. But to me, for clubs at the end of the day, like when I was traveling, I'd rather lose my clubs than my clothes because the clubs I wasn't that attached to, they could build a new set and it didn't really matter to me. Like they'll be like, so how do you want these cut? What shaft? I'm like, dude, that's your job. That's why you're here. You tell me
what,
and I don't care what I play. As opposed to some of the guys would be like, oh, dude, you got to have this for the spin rate. And I'm like, just save it because I'm not interested.
No way. Wow. You know what I did think is that's crazy too, that's just coming to my mind right now is the fact that you didn't use AA to get sober, and I feel like a lot of your videos are like AA verbiage.
I've never been. I've
is
walked
that from mom or just coincidence? Because
well, it can't be from her
stuff.
Because when she would spew it, I'd never listen. So it can't be from her. I mean, I've been to the AA like a handful of times to watch her get her chip.
Okay,
but no, man, I've never watched an AA video. I literally, like I told you, I just Google something, I watch it, and I don't know. I feel like I just enjoy talking. I can connect with people.
Where do you get your points from talking every day?
They just pop in my head.
Really?
Yeah. I don't. And actually, when I posted my last one, she's like, and I said, I haven't even listened to it. She's like, so you just do these and post them and you don't listen to them? I'm like, no, man. That's as authentic as you can get, you know?
Same. I've never even listened to a full episode of my podcast.
Okay.
Afterwards,
exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's funny. I was walking with, I don't remember if it was Grant or one of my other buddies, like 2 weeks ago, and I was coming in to meet somebody and he's like, asked me like, how well we know each other. I'm like, I don't know this dude. I'm like, I'm going to meet him. Yeah. My hair. They're like, what do you mean? I was like, I meet him literally right before we record.
Exactly.
He's like, and it's, I'm like, that's as authentic and genuine as it gets. You know,
no question.
I don't know anything. And like before, I didn't ask you about your story because I want to find out here the first time for myself too.
Exactly.
That's what I like.
That's authentic.
All right. So sobriety. I feel like you can do a lot talking with sobriety. Yeah. And then do you get a bunch of responses back? Because I feel like no matter how the inspirational, motivational stuff I do, when it's about sobriety stuff is when people blow me up. And then I feel like you realize how many people struggle with sobriety.
1,000%. When I did the first video, I thought, you know, I had no intentions of growing an Instagram page. I just wanted to reach out to maybe that one person. And I'm telling you,
clearly it probably helps you out.
No question. Absolutely. Yeah. And it literally wasn't an hour. And a buddy texts me and he goes, Charlie, I've been thinking about it. He goes, this video is what just pushed me over the edge. And that was like the feeling that it gave me.
I was hoping your
me,
video yesterday would to push my brother over the edge.
Yeah,
literally.
The feeling that it gave me, and I was like, I got to do another one. And literally my inbox, not flooded, but
for sure,
as long as there's at least one person, I'm going to continue to do it because that's all I'm trying, man. And I know how incredibly important it is to stop and what you can do with your life, man. And if that 5-minute video,
switch in your head to something positive from what we were doing before, it's game over.
Like I used to go to bed wondering what the hell I was doing with my life and wake up hungover. And now I go to bed and I wake up as a fucking winner.
Well, I always say this, I used to go to bed and like, especially in prison, I used to have to dumb my life down so much. This is how bad my life was. I would try to, I'd be all like loaded in prison, I would try to stay up another commercial break longer. That's like how much I lived my life. And just so like, which was an extra, 7 to 9 minutes?
Yeah.
Just so hopefully I could sleep in an extra 7 to 9 minutes the next morning longer. And that's 7 minutes less time
you had to stay.
And now I'm like, dude, I can't wait to go to bed at night to wake up the next morning.
Amen. That is the great, what you just said, I tell people that and they have this look like, wow, I don't feel like that. And when you get that feeling, it is the most powerful thing I've ever felt. Like I cannot, we go to bed early. We go to bed like 8:30, 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
And I would go to bed earlier if I could, man. I'm glad that it gets dark now so I don't gotta feel bad going to bed when the sun was out because I can't wait to get up and get my next day rolling, man. It's addicting. It's a drug in itself. When you feel this good every single day, and then, you know, I've changed my health. I lost 60 pounds. I watch what I put into my mouth.
How tall are you? What do you weigh right now?
6'4", 210.
Damn.
Yeah, I was 6'4", 265-ish.
Wow.
But I've taken that golf discipline and applied it to my health. And, you know, at the end of this, all it is discipline, but not a lot of people have it. You know, it's saying no to certain things and saying yes. And that's hard, especially when you're trying to fight an addiction, you know?
Yeah.
For
wow,
sure.
Wow, bro. What a cool story. This is even better than I literally anticipated. Because here's the deal. I know, not that I know a lot of golfers, I know a lot of dudes that were on tours or this and that, and it's like never like really PGA tours. Like, well, you're literally winning tournaments.
Yeah,
you could have done some shit if you weren't drinking.
Yeah,
it's like, I can't fathom that, bro.
Me neither.
Like those number 50 and 52 greens. I'm gonna think about that all day for the rest. For the rest of the day.
I did, man. I would literally stripe show it, and I couldn't putt. I couldn't make the putts that needed. But I don't. It doesn't even cross my mind to go back out. I'll tell you what. When 50 comes. Hell, I want to have a rig again. I want to take my missus, and I think because my boy will be older. That's my big thing right now is I'm not leaving him. I've only got one. I enjoy the shit out of it.
Okay, cool.
And that's what's most important to me. But when I told her when I'm 50, which is still 12 years away, and you know what pisses me off is when I go play with these kids that are, you know, they're 20 or 30, and they're like, so you got the senior tour like in the next year or two? I'm like, no, buddy, I'm barely older than you, you know?
Yeah, right?
But then I'm really looking forward to that. That's a long ways away, but that is still a dream of mine. Is I'd love to go run the senior tour, play with those. Because then, you know, the PGA Tour, man, it's a vicious place. Guys will stab you in the back in 2 seconds because you're playing for your job. You have to perform every year to keep your job, and if you don't, nobody gives a shit about you. You are immediately gone, and nobody even thinks twice about you. So
TV,
if somebody's going to do a little something to take that edge from you, they're going to do it. And I get it. But the camaraderie there is very minimal, man, because you're such competitors and you spend, you know, everybody's like, oh, the PGA Tour, you get to go to all these cities and see all these places. And my wife, when we first started dating, she'd come with me and she'd be like, well, we're not really, I'm like, no, you get up, you practice, you play a 6-hour round and you're too tired. You don't have time to go do anything. So the PGA Tour is great. I'm not knocking it one bit. It was an amazing experience for me. If you're out there chasing it and you're young, keep doing it, man. But it's just not my jam now.
Wow. Yeah, cool.
Just not my jam.
Well, I'm excited for this and I'm excited to get around to golfing with you.
Yeah.
Dude, thank you for this today. And I'm going to have you back on in like 6 months or a year.
Cool.
Yeah, for sure. We're going to do some more stuff. Thank you so much for sharing your story today. Yeah. We're at 2 o'clock already, bro.
Wow. A
I'll have you back on in 6 months, quicker than that, whatever you want, bro. But dude, thank you so much. Subscribe to my podcast, go follow his stuff, and I'll have you back on soon. Thank you again.
Cool. This is cool. Thank you. Appreciate it.